Getting into college is difficult. Some people, as we know, use unethical and illegal means to get their kids in. But for many who do it the honest way, when they graduate, they're handed a diploma and a huge bill. Welcome. We're glad you're part of the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. Before we get into today's program about student debt, I just want to thank you for all the comments and thoughts you send to us. Please keep them coming. You can reach us at tfs@wshu.org. And we ask you to follow us on Twitter. Look for us at Full Story WSHU. Now back to student debt. The latest number that we have is around $1.4 or $1.5 trillion. So now that we know the number, what does it actually mean and how does this affect all of us? Martin Cantor is joining us. Professor Cantor is the former Suffolk County Economic Development Commissioner and today is the director of the Long Island Center for Socioeconomic Policy. Professor, welcome back to The Full Story. Thank you for your time.
Well, thanks for having me, Ron. Good to be here.
The numbers I have seen say that college graduates on Long Island owe around $35,000 when they head into the workforce. Is that number correct?
Well, that's the one that's being discussed. So at the present moment, that's probably what it is.
That's quite an amount to owe when you're just starting in the real world, so to speak.
Well, you know, yes, it is. It gets larger and larger depending upon the school you go to. If you're considering the community colleges and the state universities on Long Island, then that number is good. But if you go to some of the bigger schools, Michigan State, Wisconsin, you know, those numbers become larger. And yes, when you first get out of college and you're starting a job, they are imposing numbers. Just to put it in perspective, maybe 25 years ago, that $35,000 would have been the mortgage you would have spent on a new home.
Mm-hmm. So how are the graduates handling this? What are you saying?
Well, they're not handling it well. Part of that is, look, when you go to college, colleges, a lot of them are liberal arts colleges, you know, they teach the basics. You don't come out sometimes with a skill set that will earn you the a salary that will pay off your student debt within a period of time. So when you find, you know, right now teaching starts off low salaries. Journalism is very, very low salaries. And these are the degrees that I find a lot of the students are coming out with. When I graduated college, and I have to say I went to Brooklyn College, at that time, it was only $25 general admission fee to go to school, which was absolutely great. So I, for one, did not come out with a big loan. But today, those, you know, taxpayers can't afford tuition free, even though New York State has a program that you can to help reduce that. If you don't come out with a skill, and I went to school at that time to become an accountant only because I knew I would be earning a living that I could get married on, pay a mortgage for a home, and pay for advanced education. Today, you don't start out if you don't have skill sets that'll pay you a salary that you can pay down your student debt. It is very difficult.
Do you ever think about who might be responsible for this? The students, if they're saying, you know what, I'm going to take out these loans, I'll pay them back. Could it be some of the colleges who are saying, look, you'll make the money back when you graduate? Is there anyone that you can actually say this is the crux of the problem here?
I think it's a combination of several factors. Number one, tuition at universities have gone up tremendously. Teaching salaries have gone up. Overhead has gone up. At schools, so it gets translates down into credit cost per credit hour at colleges. The other one is when you go to high school guidance counselors, you know, your grades might be such, and they'll recommend certain colleges to go to. The other one is peer pressure and advertising. And who doesn't want to go to an Ivy League school, or who doesn't want to go to a Michigan State or Ohio State or Penn State when they have great football programs and things like that? So it's a combination of a whole variety of factors, and one of which, you know, could be, you know, parents wanting their schools, their children rather, to go to a real name school. You know, the reality is as a dean of a prominent state university here on Long Island, it said to me, was after 6 months, where you went to college. It's all about your job, how you handled your job, and your experience that people care about.
If I can, I'm going to ask you to reiterate that one point because I think it's so important. Our phone connection went south there for 1 second, and you were saying after 6 months after you graduate, and could you say line again?
Sure. A prominent dean of a state university here on Long Island said, because we were talking about Harvard University and we were talking about other schools, and he said, look, after 6 months in the workforce, no employer really cares where you went to college. It's all about how you are performing on the job. You know, coming from certain colleges and universities provide a network of individuals in the private sector, public sector, or academia, which can help a graduate. But by and large, you know, after you graduate college, you get your first job, second job. Nobody looks at where you went to school. They'll look at it and say, okay, you went to a good school. But they say, okay, what did you do on your last job? What can you do to help my company? What are your plans for the future with this company? And that's what employers care about. Where you went to school becomes less and less important. And the problem you have here is here you went to pay $40,000 a year at Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin. You've got $160,000 debt, and you come out, and nobody cares you went to University of Wisconsin. They only care about is, okay, what job skills do you have, and what can you make my company more profitable and contribute to the culture of my company?
We're talking with Martin Cantor, the director of the Long Island Center for Socioeconomic Policy, the former Suffolk County Economic Development Commissioner. Professor, we have about 4 minutes left, and with that time, I'd like to squeeze in three, I think, important questions. What effect do you believe that the student debt is having on Long Island and this region?
Well, it's on the region, it's making students, one of the shows that I appeared on previously, your guests, millennials, had said, look, they're waiting to get married, they're waiting to buy a home, they're waiting to raise a family until they have a job that makes them financially secure, and part of that financial security is paying off a mortgage, is paying off student debt. So it is having an effect on how the new generation, this next generation, which will replace the baby boomers in the workforce, see the future, their future of raising families, and that puts a drag on home prices, a drag on the economy.
What about those reports that it isn't just, and I know we were talking about millennials, it isn't just millennials, but it's those in their 50s, late 50s, those who may be approaching retirement, who are still paying off their student loans, who are now paying off or helping to pay off the loans for their kids?
Oh, yeah, and count me in on that category. A part of the problem is also the banks and the people who lend the money. When you take out a student loan, it's almost like a consumer debt. It's not like when you buy a house and it's a self-amortizing loan over a period of time. That would be fairer. What this is, it's like a credit card. You pay off a minimum amount per month, and what you don't pay off gets added to your principal, and then the interest rate's applied. I think there should be a totally different way of financing college and paying down the debt, more aligned to home mortgages, which are fairer to the lender and quite frankly, way fairer to the student and the borrower.
Martin Cantor, what's a quick fix for this? What should be done in the very near term that will help everyone, will help the economy, and will help the students?
Well, I think the students have to take a hard look at what their skills they want to learn in college, and take a realistic look at the entry level salaries, and do a budget projection on how long you'll have to work to pay down your debt. The other thing is, instead of just giving lip service to student debt, this is one place where I believe legislation could become effective. We should pass legislation that makes student debt more like a home mortgage and not like like a consumer debt or credit cards. If they do that, then the students have a fixed amount that they know what they have to pay. Parents know what they have to pay, and then you can really budget your future in buying a home, raising a family, and paying down your debt.
What do you think of the idea, the proposals for free college?
There's no free lunch. If there's a free college, somebody's paying for it, and that somebody is the taxpayers. So we have to take a hard look at where are you getting the money. You can't tax the wealthy enough to cover it. And the only place you can get that money is from the middle class, which is already struggling with paying off the student debt and paying off their mortgages and paying off their children's loans. So we have to be very careful when we say free tuition, because it's not free. There's nothing ever free in this country. Somebody is paying for it.
Will the problem get worse in the near future, or do you see proposals that may possibly make it better?
I see no proposals that will make it better. I think we're stuck with this problem for a period of time because there's no political will to go after the financing institutions that lend the money that create this student loan debacle.
Martin Cantor, director of the Long Island Center for Socioeconomic Policy, the former Suffolk County Economic Development Commissioner. Professor, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you, sir.
Always a pleasure to be with you, Ron.
If you would like to comment on today's program, we ask you to email us. It's tfs@wshu.org. You can find us on Twitter. We're at Full Story WSHU. And our phone number for voicemails is 833-CALL-TFS. That number is 833-225-5837. When we come back, we're going to have other guests talking about student debt today, including the president of the Connecticut Colleges and State Universities. So stay with us, and if you would like to join the conversation, you know the email, you know Twitter, let us know. We'll be right back. This is The Full Story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. Today, our focus is on student debt. In the last 2 weeks, many people were outraged by the allegations that some wealthy people spent a lot of money conniving to get their kids into so-called elite colleges. For most students and parents, just getting into non-elite college is tough enough, and paying for that education is just as difficult. Let's get some other thoughts now and some new perspective. Kathy Koch is Director of Tax Policy at Ernst & Young Americas. Kathy was with us a while back because Ernst & Young did a very interesting report on millennials. And obviously, many millennials are struggling with student debt. Mark Ojakian knows the student debt problem just as well as anyone else in our region. He's the president of the Connecticut State Colleges and Universities. Kathy, welcome back, President Ojakian. We appreciate your time, sir.
Thank you very much.
Nice to be here today.
President Ojakian, I'd like to begin with you. How did we get to this point? $1.5 trillion and growing?
Well, I think we got to this point because higher education has become more expensive over time. The cost to operate the institutions has dramatically increased as the cost of labor has increased. And I also think that I think as your previous guest was talking about, financial institutions who have lent money to students have not been as responsive to what their real needs are for when they graduate and have to pay back that debt over a greater number of years than, you know, when I went to school, I like to say back in the Civil War days. But what I'm most proud of in our system is that we have a very affordable, accessible, high-quality system of higher education in Connecticut, where, for example, the average debt at our four-year institutions when you graduate is about $20,000, and at our community colleges, it's about $5,000 to $7,000. Mm. And that's because we have kept our tuition very affordable for our students. We've provided them not only the opportunity to receive federal financial aid, but institutional financial aid and state scholarship dollars to be able to mitigate some of those costs. So while debt is an issue nationwide, and I understand in some pockets of our system it is an issue, we have deliberately tried to keep our costs under control so that the students and the taxpayers don't have to subsidize those costs.
But President Ojakian, and Kathy, I'm going to ask you to stand by for just for 1 second. I'll get to you in a moment. Mr. President, what do you think about when you hear some people say the students and their families knew what they were doing, and now they're complaining? They went in eyes wide open.
Well, I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure that that's the case. You know, there are some people that went in with their eyes wide open. There is such a demand for folks to get a college education, either a two-year, a four-year, or a graduate, you know, level, that they take on amounts of debt that they sometimes don't understand what that means for their future liabilities. Remember, a lot of students, and my experiences with students in our system are first-generation students. So they don't have parents or family support systems that understand what it's like to go to college and have to pay for college. I think folks in maybe more wealthy brackets who maybe have financial advisors understand it. But the bulk of students that are going to at least public higher education institutions, both in Connecticut and nationwide, don't have that luxury. And so I think we need to provide as much information and counseling, which we do at our system, so that individuals and their families understand what their financial obligations could be, you know, in the future. I mean, a lot of students, for example, I'll just give you an example, you know, are somewhat suspicious of taking out federally guaranteed loans. But at the same time, they're charging some of their tuition and books on a credit card.
Mm.
So you don't have a loan that, you know, might be in your best interest to take out, as opposed to charging something on a credit card. And we don't really track that in terms of, you know, student debt, at least in our system. But I think we have a collective responsibility to educate all of our students. And I think this latest scandal just tells everybody who's working really hard on campuses to inform and to educate students about educational costs, and does real disservice to those folks that are working to put their children through school, or they're working themselves to be able to afford their education, when you can pay, you know, $15, $25, $500,000 to cheat and get your children into school.
Your story makes me think that in high school, maybe basic economics should be stressed a little bit more in junior and senior year, right?
Well, and I think we need to do a better job of getting into the high schools to talk to students about financial liability into the future. Many times, you know, folks in high schools look down on public higher education because they think, if I don't get into a Yale or a Harvard or, you know, some elite school, that I'm, you know, not doing, you know, my best. And there's a whole lot of institutions out there, public and private institutions, that provide increasingly higher quality education at a fraction of the cost. And as your last guest talked about, right, at the end of the day, when you go to look for a job, employers are more and more not interested in maybe where you got your degree, but that you got a degree, and that you are able to be part of the workforce in the 21st century, that you're able to have the critical thinking and strategic problem-solving skills that are going to be necessary, and the interpersonal skills, rather than you went, you know, to an Ivy League school. We see many of our students who are being employed at the same rates as students that are graduating from Ivy League institutions. And I'm not trying to put down an Ivy League education.
Right.
But what I'm saying is that the workforce of the future is going to rely less on, you know, where you went to school, but that you did go to school.
Mark Ojakian is the president of Connecticut State College and Universities. We'd like to bring in Kathy Koch, who's been waiting patiently. Kathy is the director of tax policy at Ernst & Young Americas. Kathy was on the program with us about a month or two ago, because EY, Ernst & Young, had a fascinating study of many aspects of the lives of millennials. And Kathy, how is carrying such a huge debt affecting millennials?
Well, it's interesting. We went back to some some primaries here. 61% of our respondents said they were in four-year college. So we don't, you don't have a huge representation from not four-year college. But most of these students, more this year than 2 years ago, believe that the cost of a college education was worth it. Just 2 years ago, only 49% said it was worth it. And when you think about it, that's odd because this is the largest single investment these people have ever made, probably, in their lifetimes, you know, up to that point. This year, a little bit more positivity, 52% said it was worth it. And that differed by major. And, of course, I guess didn't surprise me that 58% of STEM majors, 68% of STEM majors said college was worth it, but a full 63% of humanities said it was worth it. And I was pleased to see that some, you know, that we still have people kind of wanting to go and learn how to write. That made me happy. But what colleges do, what this kind of debt does to them once they get out is significant. It limits entrepreneurship in this generation. We see that many of the 63% of those currently paying off debt have considered starting their own business, but only 53% of people who have no debt or finished paying it off have considered starting their own business. It's depressing entrepreneurship in this group. Many people in this group want to be entrepreneurs and say they admire entrepreneurship, and yet this is the least entrepreneurial generation that we've ever seen in this country. We also see, I think, just general stress in this generation. We see them choosing career options that are far more safe relative to maybe career options that are a little better for them. For instance, a large percentage of this generation, you know, they want to be entrepreneurs, but they say they're going to stay in a corporate job and climb the corporate ladder because that's kind of the safer thing to do. And I think that's what happens when you're carrying debt.
Kathy, I'm going to ask you to hold on for 1 second because we've got a number of emails that have come in already. I'd like to get your reaction to it and also President Ojakian's. For instance, Nick wrote into us from Long Island. He says, I'm a chef. I have a little under $80,000 in debt, $80,000. I pay roughly $1,200 a month to federal and private loans. That's approximately 50% of my salary. The student debt crisis is horrible. School has become less about education and more about profit. It's somewhat ironic that we graduate high school, move on to college to better ourselves and create a brighter future, and then upon graduation, spend the next 10 to 15 years living at your bare minimum in order to pay off your loans to afford a better future. President Ojakian, what do you think?
I think that's a travesty. I think the fact that that this student followed his passion and was able to you know, become a chef, but had to, you know, has to live with this amount of debt is really outrageous. And I think part of that, he's correct. A lot of institutions these days, I think, care about, you know, profit over students. And, you know, I'm fortunate enough to be in a system where we don't rely on profit. You know, we're public sector, and we actually have culinary arts programs at our 2 year and 4 year institutions where students can have that same experience and move on to become chefs or own restaurants at a fraction of the cost. But I think sometimes, you know, institutions may not have the best interest of the student at heart, and they sort of trap them in a program where they know that they want to complete and get a job. And then, I mean, I'm surprised to hear the amount of debt that this gentleman has, you know, with becoming a chef. It's outrageous to me.
Kathy, can I read an email to you? And I'd like to get your reaction to it. Nicole writes to us, and she writes, recently graduated from a state school in New Jersey with over $35,000 worth of student debt. I'm still enrolled as a student in a master's program, so I haven't had to begin my payments. It scares me, knowing that I may not have a full-time job once I graduate, but I'm expected to start payments within 6 months of graduating.
Yeah, that is scary. And, you know, I myself went to state school, and it was a lot lower. Things have escalated everywhere, and I can't imagine that stress. And we did ask people about, you know, how do you feel about your current ability to cover expenses? And these, again, you know, we have a great deal of our respondents. We have 50% who are currently paying off or plan to take on debt. So this is half of our respondents. And when we ask them, you know, are you, describe your financial situation in terms of ability to cover your expenses. Although we saw an overall improvement from 2016 because the job picture is arguably better, those making, you know, a little or a lot more than needed to cover their expenses was still only 43%. So we have less than half of our respondents who are saying they don't have, you know, they can cover their expenses, but not much more. Mm. And in fact, those making just enough to cover their expenses remained at 35%. That's a third of these respondents. And the, again, the survey was scientifically designed and chosen. So, you know, potentially you have a third of people out there who are stressing about covering expenses. And this is a generation, remember, that's lived through three recessions, that is kind of primed to be financially stressed. And now they're looking at their own lives. They're seeing they did the right thing. They went to college. You know, they most of them, you know, have a very, very strong work ethic. And a third of them can't afford to cover expenses or are worried about it, which is just as bad as really not being able to. It does suggest that this generation, it looks different than certainly than my generation or the one in between.
Mm-hmm. President Ojakian, I'd like to ask you to respond to what a guest said on our program the other day. We did a show about the college admissions scandal, and this was a college coach who was based up in Boston, and we talked about students going to college. And she said, look, in some cases, I think there are some students who simply have to say, you know, maybe college isn't right for me at this moment. Maybe I should take a few years, think about what I want to do, maybe a trade school, maybe the military. But everyone seems to think that college is almost mandatory nowadays for certain people in their life's goals. And she said, I think at some point, some people need to pull back and reevaluate.
I couldn't agree with that more. You know, this isn't one size fits all. And not everybody needs to go and get a college degree to be successful in a career or in their, you know, in their life. What we constantly tell students when they, you know, think about coming to one of our institutions is look at the variety of programs we have that are either credentialed or that are degree programs that could lead you to a job. For example, you know, manufacturing jobs in the state are on the uprise, and we expect to have the need for about 35,000 manufacturing jobs in the state of Connecticut over the next 2 decades. And we've been responsive to that need and have put together certificate programs, 10-month certificate programs, where we see a number of students who want to get a job, want to be successful, but are not able to go to college to a four-year degree or don't want to. And so we need to provide options to everybody. And I think the important message I bring to high schools and to high school guidance counselors is don't do the students a disservice by maintaining that everybody has to get a four-year degree to be successful. Not everybody is ready. And we've seen time after time where students have tried a four-year institution, public or private. It wasn't right for them. They've come back to a community college, got a certificate or an associate's degree, and are very successful.
Hmm. Mark Ojakian is the president of Connecticut State College and Universities. Kathy Koch is with us, the director of tax policy at Ernst & Young Americas. And in just a few moments from now, we're going to be talking with Maddie Marcus, who is a millennial and who is struggling with college debt. And she is going to give us her perspective. We have a number of other emails to get to, and we would like to include yours. You can email us at tfs@wshu.org. You can find us on Twitter or Facebook, if that's what you like. We are at Full Story WSHU. Our voicemail is always open for you. It is 833-CALL-TFS, and that translates to 833-225-3255. 5837. And while I have you for just a moment, I want to tell you that tomorrow is our weekly news roundup, and we're going to have Karen DeWitt with us, giving us a perspective from Albany. Ebon Gudama will be with us in the studio and will be telling us what is going on in Hartford. And speaking of schools, there's a new school regionalization proposal for Connecticut, and Ebon is going to tell us all about that tomorrow. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. This is The Full Story on WSHU. I'm Ron Ropiak. We're going to spend a few more minutes talking about debt, specifically student debt. The estimate is that students who went to college in the United States owe about $1.5 trillion. And debt affects many, even those near the top of the political ladder. A short time back, I spoke with U.S. Senator Chris Murphy.
I'm very supportive of efforts to, you know, give students access to a lower interest rate. I'm frankly one of the few United States senators that's still paying back my student loans. So I know how much that can bite into your budget. But ultimately, I think that by focusing on the question of student debt, we're missing the mark. The mark is the cost of college. There's just no reason that a college education should cost $70,000 to $80,000 a year. There's no reason that we can't create cheaper, shorter pathways to work. Yes, there's going to be room for a long, long time for a four-year live-away liberal arts education, but not every student needs that, and certainly not every student can afford it. So we're going to have to try to find cheaper pathways to degrees in which students maybe have to make a decision earlier than they do today about what career they want to pursue. In European countries, you choose when you're 17 or 18 years old which trade you're going into, and then you get trained specifically for it. We do very little of that in the United States. We're going to have to do more of it. That's probably good for our economy, but that's definitely good for young people's pocketbooks.
That is Chris Murphy, U.S. Senator, and I believe he's either 43 or 44 years old. He's in the U.S. Senate, and he is paying back his student loan. With us is Kathy Koch, Ernst & Young, Director of Tax Policy at EY Americas. Mark Ojakian is the President of Connecticut State Colleges and Universities. I'm going to ask them to hold on for 1 second because we're going to bring in Maddie Marcus. Maddie Marcus is a millennial. Maddie, thanks for joining us.
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me.
We appreciate your time. And I have to tell you, on our sheet, on the call sheet, it sounds like a Netflix special. It says Maddie Marcus, Millennial in Debt. And that sounds it sounds like a title of a show that you would find on Netflix nowadays. And unfortunately, that seems to be the case, isn't it?
Yeah, honestly, yeah. I wish it wasn't, but that's just, I guess, how it goes. So, yeah, I mean,
Can you give us your story? How old are you, and how much in debt are you?
Well, I'm 24 currently. I will be 25 later this year. I graduated college. I went to Stony Brook University in New York, which is actually a state school. So, you know, going to a state school and still being in debt kind of sucks. But I went to Stony Brook. I studied sociology and journalism. And from there, I graduated 2016 and pursued a career in marketing. And so I've been paying off my loans for about, maybe about two and a half years now. So, that's basically a shorthand of what it is.
How are you living? I mean, do you have roommates? Do you live at home with parents, family, and so on?
Well, I lived at home for the first 2 years after, or a year and a half, I would say, mostly, out of college. Currently now living with a roommate and in Brooklyn, so rent is certainly not cheap. But we make it work. It's all about budgeting, I guess, at this point. But my roommate and I both graduated from Stony Brook, and he doesn't have as much debt as I do, thankfully for him. But, yeah, so, I mean, the only way we could really live is if we were together or if we had, even if we had a third roommate, that would make things even easier. Because, you know, it's a tight budget with utilities and rent and everything. So
can I ask, when you went into this and you were going to college and you said to yourself, I'm going to take out these loans, did you know what you were getting into?
Not entirely. I think there was very little education in terms of, like, here's what you do financially for college. I kind of played off of the you know, my parents will help me out. My mom did a lot of help with the FAFSA and all of, like, the financial aid applications. And I did get quite a bit of financial aid. But my other thing was I wanted to move out. I wanted to dorm. I wanted to have a full college experience. And granted, I was pretty close to home going to Stony Brook. But at the same time, it's, you know, what is college if you're, you know, commuting? And to me, that kind of felt like the same as high school. So I wanted to move out, branch out. So in order to do that, I had to take out loans, and to pay what the financial aid couldn't, I had to take out loans. And I didn't really know, I didn't even know the meaning of unsubsidized and subsidized at that point. So it's been very, like, it's been a learning process, especially out of college. I've spoken to many advisors on how to help get on the right track and everything, and they're always very helpful. But it would have definitely helped me a lot more if I really knew what it would amount to if I did take out those loans. Because, you know, back when I was 18, I was like, I want to live on my own. I want to get out of home. I want to just have my own place, live my own life, start being an adult sort of thing. And I didn't really realize the gravity of taking out, like, you know, for however many loans I took out. I think it was about like 10 grand a year for 4 years that I would need in order to, like, complete college and to actually live and dorm and everything. So I think that's what really hit me. But if I knew back then what it was, what I know now about the loans, I probably would have commuted, stayed at home, and dealt with it.
Maddie, I'm going to ask you to hold on for 1 second because I'm going to get some reaction from our other guests. And we were just talking about this before the break. Marco Jakin is the president of Connecticut State College and Universities. And President Ojakian, it's what you and I were just talking about, a little bit more of an education in the high school years, right?
Yes, I think financial literacy is critical for I would say, you know, starting in high school, so that you, as you go through and you're thinking about your post, you know, high school opportunities, you will understand what some of those decisions you make might lead to. You know, it's really too bad that even going, as I think Maddie just indicated, and by the way, I love the name. My granddaughter's name is Maddie. Just understanding the amount of loans that she had to take out to go to a public institution in New York, you know, that needs to sort of be reassessed. What happens sometimes, and we're very transparent here about not doing this, is a lot of times institutions artificially deflate the cost of tuition. So I think, if I'm correct, because I just Googled it while I was sitting here, the cost of going to Stony Brook, the tuition is about $6,500. But the cost of living on campus is as an additional $17,000 to that amount. So for a total of $23,000 on an annual basis to go to a state school, I think is something that quite honestly gives me pause. You know, folks should understand right up front, you know, the difference between tuition and fees and residential costs. And that needs to be explained better to folks when they're entering college.
But and also to get back to what Maddie was saying a little bit earlier, if you want the college experience and you're an 18-year-old, you want out of mom and dad's house, right, and you want to go onto the campus and you want to start living your own life. So that's where a lot of the cost comes in. Kathy Koch, Director of Tax Policy at Ernst & Young Americas. Kathy, from EY's research, is this a problem unique to the United States or is this occurring in other countries?
You know, we didn't do a global study, so I cannot answer that. What I can say, though, ironically, or, you know, interestingly, I think, given that we have Maddie on, is that women in the U.S. are, in our survey, are more concerned about being able to afford to pay their student loan than men. And the differences were not insignificant. Women, 55% of women respondents responded that they were worried a lot or some about paying their debt, while only 39% of men felt the same way. 52% of women have to or plan to take debt, only 48% of men. So while I can't tell you about other countries, I can tell you that the gender difference in the U.S. is, you know, is interesting because women have more financial stress. And this happened actually throughout our survey. So Maddie's experience, and I have a lot of sympathy for it, women are especially sensitive about it. And I would love to kind of to drill down on that and find out why at our next survey.
We have a number of emails that have come in. I'm going to try and get to as many of them as I can before the end of the program and get your reactions to them. From Abby, this comes in. My family was too wealthy for financial aid, but too poor to actually afford the schools I got accepted to. Both my parents are teachers and understand the cost of education, but now I'm weighed down by over $60,000 of student debt. These loans are crippling. I won't be able to pay them off by the time I'm ready to settle down and start a family. I'll be juggling my student loans along with a mortgage and car payments and anything else that comes my way. The loans are also a deterrent to pursue any postgraduate work. I would love to get my master's and go back to school, but in my profession, a master's degree does not necessarily mean more money in my paycheck and therefore doesn't make a master's degree all that necessary. Maddie, Marcus, any chance of you going back to school, taking on additional debt, another degree?
That is 100%. I have thought about it. And, you know, the first 4 years I was in college, I tossed around a bunch of different majors just because I was trying to figure out what exactly I wanted to do and what I had fun with and what I was also really good at. So I went back and forth a lot. And I feel like now on the other side of it, I didn't really get the education that I would have liked. So while I'm not really looking towards grad school, I have thought about grad school, and with the degree that I have in journalism sociology, it's much similar to that problem where a master's degree wouldn't really make me more money and it would just add on to the debt. So I have thought about going to grad school, but it's kind of been thrown off the table. And then I started exploring going back for a second undergrad degree and studying more that I wanted to study. So I said I studied journalism sociology. I've been thinking about going back in for motion graphics and animation. But again, it's expensive. And, you know, whether it's an online program or an on-campus program, it's still over at least $2,000 to even get a certification that would further my career in at least that path. So it's pretty tough, and, you know, I've had this conversation before where I would love to go back to school, but if someone could take care of my debt, that would really make the answer.
We have an email from Kelly, who writes, Kelly's about $80,000 in student debt, and writes, I decided to go to college out of state, and even though I had to take out student loans to pay for college, I feel it was worth the debt. I had to pay for my bachelor degree, and I'm currently working towards my PhD. President Ojakian, I'd like to ask you what the legislators and what the governor thinks about the student debt problem in Connecticut. Are they aware of the severity of the problem?
I believe that they're aware of the severity of the problem, and there's been a number of proposals, both from the administration and from the legislature on debt-free college. A lot of those are still in the process of being, fully drafted and, into language that folks have the ability to comment on. I heard your previous speaker as well talk about nothing's free, in life. And I agree. I think what institutions have a bigger obligation to do is to provide more financial aid at the institutional level that meet the needs of those students that are caught in the middle. We know that federal financial aid covers a lot of the poorer students who are on full Pell Grants. But what we do here in Connecticut is we set a threshold of at least 15% of all tuition dollars that come in need to be put aside into an institutional financial aid pot of money that is distributed to students based on need, but mostly those students that are in the middle class. And if institutions don't have similar sorts of programs, then maybe, that's something that could be used to address those students that are in the middle, that are caught between, I don't qualify for federal financial aid, but I'm not wealthy enough to pay for all 4 years of my education.
I'd like to get to one last email since we're short on time. Greg writes, most of the real problems are due to profit institutions convincing naive young people to take out large loans guaranteed by the government. The institution gets paid whether or not the student is prepared for a job that will allow him or her to repay the loan. The government has become a guarantor that allows the lending institution to not care whether the individual will ever be able to repay the loan. The government has become a guarantor that allows the lending institution to not care whether the individual will ever be able to repay the loan. Maddie, could you hear me all right?
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay, great. What do you think about that? Were you naive?
To a certain extent, I would think, but so I was coming from both of my parents had student loans, so I kind of had like a sense. My father is actually still paying them off. He's in his mid-50s, and
So he's paying off his loan, and is he also paying off yours?
No, actually, I'm paying off my own loans, and he has, I think he said he was at least in six figures for grad school and undergrad. So I've come from a lot of that, so I kind of knew what was going on. But like I said before, after I graduated, it kind of hit me with a whole slew of new information that even my parents didn't really know how to help or give advice. I mean, both of them try to send me a little bit of money here and there to help out, but it's not, you know, it's just kind of extra cash, which is definitely helpful, especially with the loan payments every month. But yeah, so I come from a family of lovely student loan debt.
Maddie, just with the 20 seconds I have remaining with you, if a prospective college student is listening to the program, what advice would you have for him or her?
I would say to evaluate your career path and learn the salaries or the general starting salaries and then budget based on that. So if you are a student who's looking into a career like me for journalism or PR or marketing or anything like that, I would just do a quick Google search on what a base salary is for entry level and just have your finances in order, I guess, is the short answer, just to so it's not doesn't come as a shock, and just expect to pay upwards to about $300 a month, depending on your salary in student loans. So nothing comes as a surprise, and you just pay them off, and you have your budget set, and it's a little bit easier to maneuver living costs.
Kathy Koch, we have 30 seconds left for you, please.
Well, my response for the question you asked is to look at what millennials in the survey said were their top priorities for government spending, and public education has been the top priority the last two surveys. I think, you know, we need to talk to policymakers and tell them your story, Maddie, and tell people kind of how much trouble and try to come up with a solution, because education is imperative. I think doing what you love and doing it well in a kind of in a career that, you know, that you're going to excel in and be a little differentiated in, that's the best way to pay off your student debt. But there's a lot of belief that the government should, you know, be spending tax dollars on public education. And how that money is spent, I guess, remains to be influenced.
President Ojekian, you have the final word today.
The final word. No, I would just say that we all need to do a better job of educating prospective students and their families on the educational opportunities that exist everywhere, but also what the financial liabilities might be if they choose a certain direction. As I said, many students, don't have the luxury of having family support, and I think sometimes they're taken advantage of and end up in a position where the debt is so extreme that they're paying it off well into their 50s and 60s.
President Ojekian, I have to hold you there. Thank you, sir. Mark Ojekian, Kathy Koch, Maddie Marcus, Natalie Chafari produced our program today. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks for listening. Thanks to all of you for being part of The Full Story.